You are listening to a Sunday sermon from St. Thomas Episcopal Church in Bellevue, Washington. We are a community that seeks God's presence, serves Christ and others, and grows together in faith. Welcome to our podcast.
The following sermon was preached on the 20th Sunday after Pentecost, October 22nd, 2017, by the Reverend Lex Breckenridge, rector at St. Thomas.
The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to Matthew.
Glory to you, Lord Christ.
The Pharisees went and plotted to entrap Jesus in what he said. So they sent their disciples to him, along with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are sincere and teach the way of God in accordance with truth, and show deference to no one, for you do not regard people with partiality. Tell us then what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not?" But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, "Why are you putting me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin used for the tax." And they brought him a denarius. Then he said to them, "Whose head is this, and whose title?" They answered, "The emperor's." Then he said to them, "Give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's." When they heard this, they were amazed, and they left him and went away. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Christ.
There's a story that's told and retold in the Middle East about how to help someone who's drowned. The story goes that a man had fallen into a river. He wasn't much of a swimmer and was in real danger of drowning. A crowd of concerned people wanted to rescue him. They were standing at the edge of the water, each of them urgently shouting to him, "Give me your hand, give me your hand." The man was battling the waves and ignored their urgent pleas. He kept going under and was clearly struggling just to take another breath. And then another man walked on the scene. He too cared about the drowning man, but his approach was a little different. Calmly, he walked up to the water, waded in up to his knees, glanced lovingly at the drowning man, and said, "Here, take my hand." Much to everyone's surprise, the drowning man reached out and grabbed this fellow's hand. The two came out of the dangerous water. The drowning man sat up at the edge of the water, breathing heavily, looking relieved, exhausted, and grateful. The crowd turned to the man and said in complete puzzlement, "How were you able to reach him when he didn't heed our plea?" The man said, "You all asked him for something, his hand. I offered him something, my hand. A drowning man is in no position to give you anything." Let's remember not to ask anything of someone who is drowning. I ran across this story that comes to us from the Sufi tradition this week, and it really hit home. So many people right now feel as if they're drowning. Harvey, Irma, Maria, Las Vegas, Napa, Sonoma. Fires, floods, shootings. It feels pretty chaotic out there. Zani and I had the experience of the Sonoma fires last week as we were driving home from Robert and Jesse's wedding. As we tried to leave Sonoma Monday morning before last, we found ourselves with fire all around us. And we were faced with roadblock after roadblock. When we did at last make it out of harm's way, we realized that we were a little traumatized by the experience of witnessing, even if from a distance, a vision of hellfire. So many of us feel as if we're drowning. And it's not just these external events. I've been surprised in what seems to me like an uptick in personal brokenness. Marriages that are foundering, parent-child relationships that are conflicted, careers that are stalled, older folks who feel forgotten by family and friends. All this brings with it shame. It makes us want to run away and hide. It's just exhausting. Whether it's a result of external or internal events or some combination of the two, lots of folks feel as if they're drowning. So what do we do? I was talking about all this last week with a wise friend. We were acknowledging all the pain and trauma and shame that seems to be in the air right now. And my wise friend said, we just need to be kinder to each other. We just need to be kinder to each other. She said that with such passion and fervor. Yes, it really touched my heart. We do need to be kinder to each other. And that leads us back to our story. How was the drowning man at last saved? Not by the well-meaning people on the shore who said, hey, if you need any help, just let me know. Reach out your hand. I mean, the drowning man was too exhausted and confused to do that. He couldn't do one more thing. It was that fellow who reached out his hand to the drowning man, who got in the water with him. You know, he didn't wave at him from the shore. That's what we often do. You know, we're like people standing on the shore and we see somebody out there being storm-tossed in a small boat. We wave at him and say, hey, hope it's okay. Thoughts and prayers. You know, hope it's okay out there. No, that person who's in that boat, that person needs us to get in the boat and row with them, right? So if you want to reach out to someone who's struggling to stay above water, go to them. But don't ask them to give you their hand. Offer them your hand. Offer them your listening ear. Offer them your shoulder to weep on. Offer them your love. Release your friends and your family from the shame of their brokenness. Let them know that you love them through their brokenness. Let them know you love them. And here's a hard one, because they are broken. Because you know what? You're broken too, and so am I. Come to them just as you are. Let them be who they are. Now, I want to take this a step farther. Our world feels chaotic right now because of natural disasters and human-made disasters like Las Vegas, to be sure. But our world also feels chaotic right now because our culture feels broken. We've become so tribalized and divided, it's hard for us to speak to each other across the chasm that separates us. I shared one vision of hell with you a minute ago, I experienced in the Sonoma fires. Here's another vision of hell, the high school cafeteria. You remember the cool kids sitting at one table, the football team at another table, the nerdy kids at a third table, the lonely, unpopular kids sitting by themselves at the edge of the crowd. And everybody looking at each other dismissively or resentfully or suspiciously. And they're sure not talking to each other. It feels a little bit like that out there in the world right now, doesn't it? I mean, what do we do? Well, on its face, Jesus' conversation with the religious and political authorities about money doesn't seem particularly relevant to this question of our sad divisions. But hang in there with me. Now, a couple of things by way of background. First, the Herodians and the Pharisees were natural opponents of each other. We need to understand that. The Herodians were secular and political. They compromised with the Roman occupation so they could hold political power. The Pharisees, on the other hand, were deeply religious and didn't want anything to do with politics in general and with the Romans in particular. But on this day, Herodians and Pharisees joined forces against a common enemy, Jesus. You know the old saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend? Well, that's what's going on here. So these temporary allies think they'll trap Jesus by asking him a seemingly innocent question about the coins that bear the image of the emperor. You know, the Emperor Augustus thought of himself as a god, and his image on the coins of the realm were deeply offensive to Jews, who considered it idolatrous. To use the coin was seen to condone worshiping Caesar as a god. On the other hand, if Jesus rejected the coin, it would be considered treason. So the trap was set. One way or the other, Jesus is going to be in trouble. He'll either offend religious sensibilities or break a political law. I mean, he's apparently trapped between these two polarities, forced to take sides. But he doesn't. No, the dualistic choice he's presented with is a false one. Give to Caesar what's Caesar's and give to God what is God's, he says. What? Now, let's be very clear what that doesn't mean. That doesn't mean that we have parallel duties that we can take care of at the same time so as to be good citizens of the civic world and good citizens of the religious world. You know, two worlds that don't have anything to do with each other. That's a world that's, you know, that they're somehow separate. That's not what Jesus means at all. He has something much more radical in mind. Now, remember that earlier Jesus had summarized the law for his followers. He said, the law is this: love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as you love yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Caesar may have his image stamped on a coin, but we, you and me, we who are made in the image and the likeness of God, we belong to God, mind, body, and spirit, 100%. The coin of the realm of our flesh and blood is the image of God. Every life, your life, my life, is marked in the divine image. So every life, all of it, belongs to God. We're called to love God and serve our neighbor with all of our heart, mind, and strength, 100%. Now, that divine image can admittedly be a little difficult to see sometimes, particularly in the faces of those with whom you might disagree. We tend to see the inscription that the world leaves on us, you know, what's on the surface. That's, you know, our politics, our beliefs, our opinions, our successes and our achievements, the clothes we wear, you know, that's what's on the surface, and that's what we present to the world. But, you know, beneath all of those surface differences, there's a deeper mark, a deeper inscription. We all share a similar face. We all share the same inscription. When God looks at you, God sees the same image as God sees in that person you think is so wrong or stupid or blind or just plain crazy. That's something to think about the next time you think unkindly about that person whose worldview is a little different from yours. That person is stamped with exactly the same image as you are and as I am. Now, typically in life, it's a good thing to get two for the price of one, right? Not so much in the sermon world. So I think if you think you've gotten two sermons for the price of one today, let me see if I can land this airplane. Natural disasters, human-made disasters, human-generated conflict. All this is leaving many of us feeling like we're drowning. So let's reach out our hands to each other. Let's get in the deep water with each other. Let's get in the boat and row with each other. You know, beneath our differences, beneath our divisions, beneath all of our passionately held opinions, we're each stamped with the same divine image. We each, every one of us, belong to God, body, mind, and spirit, heart, mind, and strength, 100%. And we owe everything we have, all of our lives, all that we have, we owe to God. And that means we're here to care for each other and love each other, our neighbors. Just as the living God who we know in Jesus loves and cares for us. So, like my wise friend said, we need to be kinder to each other. And that's not pious or sentimental nonsense. It's not like some, sappy Coke commercial. I want to teach the world to sing. You know, that's not it. This is really hard work. You know, we can change the world. Do you know that? We can change the world. But it's going to happen just a little bit at a time. And I promise you, my dear sisters and brothers, that the world's going to draw closer to the heavenly vision, to the vision of God that God has for us. The world's going to draw closer to that heavenly vision one relationship at a time. One act of kindness, one act of reaching out your hand to a person who's drowning, one act of listening and understanding to what's truly beneath someone's political views that you might think are wrong or misguided. You know, that's what's going to nudge the world in a heavenly direction, reaching out your hand. My fervent hope, my deepest desire, my vision for St. Thomas is that this will always be a place where we're kind to each other. And we learn how to be kind to each other in a place like this. You know, we learn how to be kind to each other living together in community. You know, living under this big tent here. Now, I think we're doing a pretty good job of that. But we can certainly do better. I mean, I know, because I've experienced it every day, that this is a place of warmth and good fellowship and love. But I also hope, not but, it's an and, I also hope that it's a place where we can hold our differences with love and respect. Where we can have different views, where we can have different ways of seeing the world. And knowing that that's not what defines us. You know, what defines us is that divine image that's inscribed on our hearts. You know what? Underneath all of these differences, we are so very much alike. Each one of us stamped with that divine image on the coin of our flesh and blood. So, our work is to reach out our hand to each other. You know, we're all drowning in one way or the other, and we can save each other too. So, let's close by singing a pretty familiar song. It's in your worship sheet. You know, a hand is reaching out to save us. It's up to us to reach out our own hands. Who will God send?
Thank you.
For more information about St. Thomas Episcopal Church, please visit our website, www.stthomasmedina.org. That's www.stthomasmedina.org.